At T-Mobile, we believe in putting people first by treating them right. So we've upped the benefits without upping the price. With Magenta Max, you get our best plan for 5G with unlimited premium data that can't slow down based on how much smartphone data you use. Plus, you'll pay zero cost to switch. And bring your phone. We'll pay it off up to $800. Only at T-Mobile.
Capable device required for 5G. Activate up to 4K or video streams at 480p. 40 gigs high-speed tethering. Up to $800 via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Support charges waived. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
You're listening to Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. We thank you for tuning in and hope you enjoy another exciting episode of our show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. It's been a couple of weeks, and it's been real interesting. We lost an icon in the hip-hop world known by the name of DMX, Docman X, Earl Simmons, whatever you want to call him, passed away on Friday, 50 years old, and our hearts are with his family at this time. So big shout out to DMX. Thank you for what you did for hip hop, brother. We gonna miss you until we see you again. Salute. And it's the six man Dean Geronimo. I'm in the studio from NJ to NC with my right hand man, Mark Lee. So Mark, tell me what's good in your neck of the woods, my brother.
Well, you know, the weather's good. We got some nice weather out here. It's like probably like about 60 or 70 degrees or something like that. So definitely some enjoyable weather. So we had some rain and some torrential rain for a couple of days over the weekend. So this pleasant weather is definitely good and definitely feeling very spring-like. I've stepped outside of my building in terms of the apartment a couple of times. You know, I've been busy working and everything, but I still had to get at least a little bit of those sun rays and everything. So I definitely stepped out, heard the birds chirping, stepped out and felt some of those sun rays. But definitely that's some of the things that are going on. Of course, there's been negative news as well, because we did have some shootings, including some that are even near the campus, and some of the Duke students are concerned about what's going on with gun violence and all of that. And we actually gave a salute on Saturday on Funk from the Front Seat, Zach's show that he does on Nine on the Grind to DMX. So definitely our sympathies do go out to that family and everything, because he was a true icon of music. There's no doubt about that. I mean, definitely incorporated a lot of different music styles. Even though he was a hip-hop artist, I got the feeling that he definitely knew about other musical styles and was definitely following in the traditions, if nothing else, of some of those other musicians that are coming from the world of jazz, blues, R&B, and a number of other styles that are out there and everything. But definitely was a true loss to our community, and definitely I know that the hip-hop community is in mourning about that. And that was actually one of two, because one of his guests, a young fellow, and I don't want to, you know, say the name wrong and everything, but one of Zach's guests, who was a young up-and-coming musician, he actually had passed away in an automobile accident. So that is, and I think he had been Zach's guest like maybe 3 weeks ago or something like that, and definitely had a lot of promise in his career and everything. But like I said, as my friend Ray says, we all, or at least most of us, know our birth dates. None of us know our expiration dates. So none of us know when that will come about or how that will come about even. You know, I'm sure that there's a book of names up at the heaven's gates, and that may have an idea of the beginning, the end, and if there are multiple chapters, if you believe in reincarnation and stuff, what all of that entails. But that is in the master plan that none of us have access to or a key to. So like I said, we won't know until we get to that chapter and all of that. But that's just kind of my feelings about our mortality. And of course, we all have that mortality, whether we want to admit it or not. And then, you know, was doing different shows. So I went down to Central. I had not been there in a minute. That's actually where our former co-host used to be at and everything. But I went down there because they were doing a pitch draft. So Travis Gales, who I worked with at WCOM, and who was actually also doing a show there, had invited me to come in because he was subbing for their regular blues guy. And they asked me to come in, talk a little bit about blues, talk about the local music scene and cultural scene. And I did that on Saturday. Popped in there, had a good conversation, got to see Kimberly Pierce, their new director, as well as Lakeisha Sykes, their GM, who I had not seen in a while. You know, everybody's been pretty much in their home, so we haven't seen each other. We might have seen each other online, but we haven't seen each other in person. So it was just good to see that they are in good shape, good health, and all of that. And then on Saturday, I had also pre-recorded a radio show that I did for Radio Nala, which is an Indian. From the music is Bollywood and Indian, but Steve Rao, who is from Morrisville and is involved in Morrisville politics, is also involved with that station, and he was doing a leadership talk. So he was having, he has a show where he has different leaders from different communities coming in, and he wanted me to share about my radio background. So I came in and talked to him and everything, and then not that long ago, I was on Russ. So Russ finally got me on as well. So that was last week since we've been off the air. So Russ finally got me to do the spot that you did. So Russ has had both members of the Straight Talk family on his Russ 15-minute podcast and everything. So definitely I have been in the hot seat. I know you were in the hot seat some time back. So that's some of the things going on. And then today, Monday, was our regular host. I mean, our regular shows. I'm not going to lie, the afternoon show was a little bit of a hodgepodge. So I had guests lined up for the Monday early afternoon show, and they all showed up, including the crow, a man who does not believe we went to space and also has some issues with the way that we handle time and other things, as well as two business coaches, one from London and one from Canada. So we had a very good conversation. I said he has some interesting views. He does not believe that we went to space. He also thinks that the media is fanning the flames of hatred and division, whether it's around climate or whether it's around race or whether it's around a number of other things. But he was blaming the media and corporate America for things along that line. So it was interesting having that conversation with him and the two ladies. The sister lady was actually a former handball player, and she was on the Pan American Olympic Games back right before COVID in 2019. So she is definitely a world-class athlete, and it was great having conversations with all of them about just what's going on in the world. Like I said, I think if folks listen, they'll hear some things that they probably will totally agree with, and there might be some other things that they might be shaking their heads with because they do believe that we went to space, or they do believe in aliens, because I do know that he also dismisses that as being a form of fiction and not a reality as well. So like I said, I know different people have different views about space travel and whether we've actually set foot there or whether it's all just part of a grander Hollywood situation, and the same with space travel. I know me personally, I've seen that landing enough times that I think I've actually believed that they were there, but, you know, maybe it was a Hollywood production. I definitely believe, just based on what I call pure logic, that we cannot be the only species in a universe that has many galaxies, many planets, and all of that. Now, if you want to say, do I think that we've got other life between here and whatever that planet is that used to be called Pluto, that the jury is still out on, because I haven't seen any sign that there's anything in our immediate solar system. But, you know, we're just one of several solar systems in the universe. So I just find it hard to believe that there's not some form of life somewhere out there in one of those distant planets, just because, like I said, the world is massive and the universe is even more massive. So I'm just thinking there's got to be something out there to some degree or another. But that's just my philosophy. I don't know what yours is and everything. And so that's what was going on there. I was saying for the afternoon show, the reason I called it a hodgepodge was because, as you know, we've done even on this show sometimes, there were no guests, so I had to hustle. So I had to find some music. It is called Mullins Music in Memory. So I found a couple of tracks that I was able to play some music with, found some old clips of some interviews that I was involved with as a producer and just kind of like put together a hodgepodge of a show with me serving as the narration in between and also pulling up some news clips and news commentary from LinkedIn News. So like I said, you know, just trying to string it all together so that it at least flows as a show, even though it wasn't quite the one I had planned.
I hear that, man. When you talk about, I don't know, man. I look at that thing, I say, you know what? That might have been that first trip to the moon and all of that. So they say, something just doesn't sit right with me on that. And it's like, you know, I think it was a production. During that time, people were it wasn't hard to influence anybody because you didn't have all of these things that you have now. So, you know, if they said they made it to the moon, how would you know you can't get there? You know, but now they sent the robot over there to Mars and trying to find out if there's life over there. And so those nights get to negative 130 degrees. There's no way nobody lives there, man. You know what I'm saying? negative 130? Nah, you're gonna, your internal organs would just freeze all the way up. And there's no water there that I saw from those pictures. So, I don't know, man. It's like, you know what? It might be some life form somewhere else out there. But I'm not really trying to find them. You know what I mean? Like, might have an alien situation on your hands, bro.
And like I said, you might not want to find them if you find them. I mean, like, you know, they might have, we got two legs and two arms. They might have four legs and four arms, and we might not want to be dealing with that. And they might have, you know, maybe even abstract things that we like to have as part of our day-to-day living and everything. They might have that attached to the top of their head for all we know. So that would really be weird if we're sitting over there looking at what we consider private parts, but they're on the top of the person's head. So like I said, there's no telling what those alien forms might look like. So I'm with you on the fact that I'm not necessarily rushing to see them. And you ever notice, and this is just one of them like Hollywood production kind of deals, but if you ever notice, usually when they find us, they start experimenting on us. And I'm not trying to be experimented on. So like I said, not trying to get experimented on, not trying to be in the middle of something else. And they may be even further ahead of us in terms of technology. So they might even find a way to experiment on us, and we don't even know we've been experimented on.
Well, that's why they need to start worrying about where they are. Like, take care. Right. Like, I keep going back to stuff, man. Like, first of all, let me just say this. I'm switching gears a little bit because I'm getting ready to go into the stupidity of law enforcement officers. But I stand with Army Second Lieutenant Karan Nazario, who this weekend he was headed home and went through Windsor, Virginia, the town of Windsor. He was pulled over because they said he did not have a license plate on the back of his vehicle. He had just purchased a car, and the 30-day tag was in the window. Now, you got two officers so hell-bent on trying to get a stop that nobody looked at the back window. Even with a tenant, you can see that it's sitting in the window. I don't know how you pull up behind a vehicle and not see it sitting in the window. But you pepper sprayed this man. You knocked him to the ground. Joe Gutierrez and Daniel Crocker, y'all are sorry two pieces of some you-know-what. Because basically, you didn't pay attention. This man is in uniform. He did nothing, and if you watch the video, he did nothing to cause getting pepper spray, you know what I'm saying, pulled out of the car and all of that craziness. But the Windsor officials said they did an internal investigation. They fired one of the officers. It's time for them to get up off that money now. You know what I mean? Windsor's about 70 miles southeast of Richmond. So, you know, you owe him. And I hope he juices the hell out of the department, because that man was
speaking of
nothing.
Owing people, there was a gentleman here in North Carolina that recently got out that was dealt with during this weekend and everything, too. He recently got out of jail after being found innocent of a crime that he did not commit. He was in jail, I want to say, for 40 years. They did offer and pay him a whole bunch of money, and I forgot what it was. It was in that million-dollar phase and everything. If I can find that article, I'll pull it up and everything. But that being said, he basically said that no amount of money that they paid him was worth what he had to go through being in the system 40 years for a crime that he plainly did not commit. And now, you know, he and his young wife, that's, I guess, maybe one of the fairy tale stories that's a good part of it, because he's got a much younger wife, because I think he's like in his 60s or 70s, and the wife is maybe in her 30s, a wife or girlfriend, whatever the significant other role is and everything. But he said, he basically was like, my parents were asking for me at the time of their death. Both of his parents are gone now and everything, mm-hmm. and they were always asking, you know, when he's going to be home and all of that. So basically he was saying that the amount of money y'all gave me, I appreciate it, but it sounds like he and his lawyer are actually going after even more, because they're like, that amount is not even a lot. And it was, in the minds of a lot of people, a whole lot of money. But he was basically like, what I went through, it needed to be even more, because y'all did wrong, and y'all did me wrong big time. So y'all need to get right about what y'all doing.
Yeah, and I see as I started to talk about this thing, I mysteriously got kicked off of the phone line. But you know what? I'm not going to stop, just like this damn cop that shot Dante Wright in Minnesota. There's no way. I don't care how people spin it or try to explain it. When you work in a profession where you have to put all of that crap on every day, gun belt, handcuffs, mag light, mace, baton, you know where everything is. Because you got to put it on every single day. There's no way you can reach for your taser and say, I reached for my gun by accident. Miss me with the bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, no. I'm sorry. You mistook her gun for a taser? No. She pulled out her gun. That taser is much lighter than anybody who's ever had to handle a taser or a gun. You know the difference. A taser, it does not have as much weight as a gun, first of all. Secondly, you're going to have your gun by your dominant hand. So why are you going to reach for that when you know that's where it sits? Oh, I thought I had my taser. You're full of shit. And I hope you get charged with murder. You know what I mean? You're going to be on there saying, holy shit, I thought I just shot him. Yeah, you know you shot him. You shouldn't be a you shouldn't be a police officer. Like, the dude, man, what were you trying to prove? What did you try to prove? So now you took this man away from his little daughter, son. I don't know. I can't remember which one he has. Now he's gone.
Yep. Now because he's gone. He's taking. Because he was scared.
You need to get charged with murder. You need to get the same treatment that old boy Chauvin is getting right now, and I hope they pin him to the wall and just throw darts at him and don't stop. Because had you had your, you know, if that was an animal up under Derek Chauvin's neck, some people in the world would be outraged. Animal cruelty and all of this stuff. Qualified immunity needs to end for law enforcement. You don't need it. You do something outlandish, you need to suffer the penalties, just like you are there to enforce the laws and protect the public and enforce the rules, and then you break them. There should be no, oh, but that's the nature of the job, or, oh, he was afraid, or, oh, he's going through some. Nobody gives. Nobody cares. You are held to this higher standard than everybody else by virtue of your position, and if you disrespect that, then you should be severely punished to the fullest extent of the law, and there should be no mercy granted to you. That's just my point.
No, I agree with you, and that makes a lot of sense to me. One of the things that I know is actually he's going to try to get some people from the dark side or the gang side and everything on some of his shows and everything. But as one in law enforcement, I was wondering your thoughts, because we've been hearing a whole lot of conversations about gun control, some of these new laws about getting the high-powered rifles and the assault rifles off the streets by some of the things that President Biden is doing now. But one of the questions we've had on some of our past shows, and I'd love to hear your thoughts as one in law enforcement, is where exactly are the criminals getting the guns? And if they're getting the guns from legitimate gun shops, don't those legitimate gun shops have a duty to at least look at those people's records and not just sell the gun to any and everybody? So, like I said, are they getting them off the black market, or are they getting them from, like, walking into the stores and the pawn shops and nobody really giving a crap, and they just selling them to them, not knowing whether they're going to blow somebody's head off or not?
Let's place blame exactly where it starts, with the government. So,
right,
the same way they put crack on the street and tried to make it seem like it was just some mysterious force that came out of nowhere, these gun control laws are bullshit. And I say that because the government, you can't get a rocket launcher, bruh. You had to get that. That's a military-grade weapon. Why do dudes in the hood have rocket launchers? They didn't get them from, they didn't create it themselves. Where'd they get them from? You know what
right.
I'm saying? And when you trace it all the way back, now it's like, oh, we need these gun controls. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because then you're going to take honest individuals who are bearing arms to protect themselves and taking, you're stripping them of the right, because criminals can get a hold of anything they want. That law, first of all, I'm a criminal. Do you really think that I'm going to follow your law? Man, I'm putting the middle finger up to you and everybody else that thinks that all of a sudden I'm just going to turn around and say, oh, they got these gun control laws. Now I'm going to say, you know what? They stupid as hell. Because now we get to run everything. We got the weapons. We got the power. We have the control. Because not too many people, when you point a weapon in their face, is going to challenge that. You know what I'm saying? So now lawlessness is going to go crazy. We got shootings all the time. Every night when I turn on the news up here in this Philadelphia region, somebody's got shot. Somebody's gotten killed. Trust and believe, not too many of them dudes walked into a fucking gun show or a gun shop and purchased the weapon and said, all right, well, now I'm going to just go wild with it. You got guys running up the highway right now selling guns from one place to the other. What they need to
yep.
do is have more stiffer penalties for these guys. And like, okay, you commit a crime, you get caught, the weapon is not registered. All right, man, you're going to start off with 50 years. You know what I'm saying? And you got to do 85% of that. I don't care how old you are. And you start sticking these guys that are doing it. But the funny thing you'll find is the government will still find a way to get them back into the communities, because then they'll put it in there. They'll seize it from us. They'll look like the good guy, take those same weapons and give them to somebody else. They're back on the street, just like the drugs. So, you know, when you sit there playing the good guy, and for those who haven't not watched the, if you have Netflix, watch that thing about crack, conspiracy, and all of that stuff. If you remember, years ago when Ronald Reagan was president, he had the cocaine in his hand. Like, this is crack cocaine. And they had officers, undercover officers, go out and purchase that on the street, bring it back so he could do the speech to the nation and have those drugs in his hand. Now, if I had that same package in my hand with the way that they had changed the laws, man, I would have been still in prison. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and oh, yeah, you definitely would have still been in prison.
Right.
Probably
wouldn't
even
be home
under the prison and everything.
Wouldn't be eligible for parole till 2050. And you talk about that happening
wow.
in like the late 80s. So, you
right.
know, when they try to play these games and they say these things and try to make it sound good, then you're going to do gun control for who? Who is it controlling? Who is it designed
right.
to control? Who's going to suffer from it? The criminals are not. So, you know, you could talk a good game. Too many people are getting killed. Yeah, that's true. But how many law-abiding citizens are out here doing the killing? It's criminals, man. Or
yeah, it's definitely criminals.
With
I know
the criminal mind, you know. So you have to
yep.
you have to really look at it for what it is and stop trying to sugarcoat shit and try to make it sound good for the press. Miss me with that gun control shit. It's not going to do anything but embolden more criminals, because now I know most of the law-abiding citizens not going to have this weapon. They're not scared to shoot at all, but a lot of them are not brave enough to get shot. Now you're taking that, and you're taking it out of who's gonna control all this stuff. You talk about reentry, and it goes even further because now you're talking about the prison. What they say, the prison industrial complex, right? So you say, mm-hmm. Oh, there are too many people in prison, so reentry is the focus, and you're trying to get people back out here. You get them home, but then the community does not do anything to support them, so they resort back to what they know and end up back in prison. And then what? Don't blame the corrections. Yep. Don't blame corrections. Oh, it's corrections. We can't change a soul. Individuals, the rehabilitation starts with them. However, when they get out, they still need support. They still need assistance. They still need guidance. And then it's up to the community at that point to take care of that. Don't blame it on us. Blame it on your failure and your, you know, unwillingness to help someone who's at their lowest point. They're coming home. They need assistance. You won't give them a job. You won't, you know, you won't give them a skill. Oh, you should have learned that in prison. It doesn't matter where you learn it. I'm home now. What are you going to do to help me? Or do you want me to be a better criminal? Which one do you want?
Yep.
You got to pick your poison. And it seems like they're picking this elixir to sound good for everybody. But once you drink the Kool-Aid and you realize you've been duped, then what?
Yep. No, I agree with you. And a lot of people don't be thinking about that. And I know one of the things that on one of our past shows, I don't think it was during this 2-week downtime that we had, but on one of the past shows, Zach was talking about the fact of what's going on with our whole concept of hate crime, because he's of the opinion that we actually need to, in that case, throw the book at the hate criminals and actually leave them in jail for, like, the duration, not these little mini penalties that they get and everything. But he was, like, thinking about, like, they need to be in there possibly. I think he was talking life, and in some cases he was maybe even ready to, like, take them out and everything. But it definitely seems like he wanted to be harsher on hate crimes, and I agree that we sometimes give them slap on the wrist as well as we give some of these white-collar crimes slaps on the wrist as well. So we probably definitely need to be more enforceable about some of these things that are going on that are not in our community, whether that's the African-American community, the Latin-American community, or a number of the other minority communities, because we know that sometimes when they take care of their own, they definitely are kind of tough in their laws. I've read about some of the Asian laws that used to exist back in history, and some of those laws were very harsh, but they also probably didn't have that much crime, because you knew that if you did something stupid, you might lose.
Yeah, like, look at those Muslim countries, bro. You steal something, whatever hand, you know, I don't know if they still do this, but they said it was a point in time, like, if you stole something, whatever hand you stole, that's going to get cut off, Jack. You know, and if you tried to be a molester or whatever, they cutting off whatever you tried to use. I was like, those are the kind of, and I may be sadistic, but, you know, that needs to happen here. You know, you smack somebody because they're Asian, or you shot at somebody because they're black. All right, let's bring you in this public square and just beat you until you can't breathe anymore. And then once you start making examples of people, of course the crimes are going to go down, because they're going to be like, man, you know what? You're not just throwing them in the jail and then wasting taxpayers' money to house, feed them, and clothe them. You're going to pull them in the public square like they used to pull the slaves and try to make examples of them. So now we're going to make an example of you. And when people realize that, wait a minute, it's not just me going to jail, get sentenced, and then put in 1,000 appeals and all of this other shit. Nah, they're going to take me out here and stone me. Oh, man. I don't know if I could take that. So I guess I won't do that, you know? And it's just, you have to make things stricter. You can't ease the laws and relax the laws and then expect everyone to uphold the laws, because there's some people who just are not going to do it. And unfortunately, some of them are in higher positions because they feel like they're above the law anyway. You know?
So yep, that's the way some people feel like they're above. Yep, that's a definite problem. Feel like they're above the law and all that. But speaking about somebody that's not above the law and definitely all of that, I also know that you know, we've talked about some of the negative things with the gun laws and the shootings and everything, and definitely the loss of DMX. But I understand that there was some positive news in your world during this time off as well, because I believe that you and a certain queen celebrated a certain anniversary, because I do follow the Facebook, and I did see that there was some positive news in your life as well. So I want folks to know that Dean and his queen have been together for a number of years, and that, you know,
That's my tag team partner. Shout out to Dr. Simon, 20 years in the game, man. We've been together 20 years on Saturday. We celebrated 20 years together. So, you know, I can't complain, man. I can't complain.
It doesn't sound like you can complain. It sounds like it's a wonderful thing. You got your tag team partner's been in the game with it for 20 years and definitely probably looking forward to another 20, 30, 40, however many years the good Lord will bless y'all with and everything. But definitely seems like it is been a encouraging journey, and I know for a fact, because I had the pleasure definitely of talking to you on a pretty regular weekly basis, and I've had the pleasure of talking to her at least a few times, that y'all are both encouraging each other and doing wonders in that entrepreneurial space and everything. So definitely, I know she's also got her own media thing that's going on where she's got a conversation. I think you told me it's on YouTube and everything, but definitely
actually,
it's good to see that you...
Yeah, it's called On the Couch with Dr. Diamond, and this Saturday she's going to have Pastor Dr. Gwendolyn Cook to talk about human trafficking on her show. So, you know, it's going to be isn't Dr. Cook supposed to be on tonight?
She will be with us tonight. I've actually was just looking at the text, and she was getting ready to call us probably at around 7:45, 8 o'clock. I'm getting ready to text her and remind her of that, but we did have text communication.
We're about to have
yes,
a twice.
We'll be sharing
then. So we'll have her tonight here on Straight Talk with Dean and Mark, and then on Saturday we're on the couch with Dr. Diamond, and that's going to be live, and I'll post a live YouTube link so you can watch it live on Saturday afternoon and get some good information, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Like I said, matter of fact, while we were talking, she just texted me a photograph and texted me that she's looking forward to calling at right around 8 o'clock. So we're looking for her to call in about another 15 or 20 minutes, but she just sent me a picture of herself and the fact that she's on the roll and ready to get ready to jump on the phone and join us and all of that, because I just got that, and I got the text earlier about 9:10 that she would be calling. But, yes, I just got the word that she is en route, as they say.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good thing, man. And she has – I know she has some stories to tell, but, you know, we're not going to put that – we'll let her tell those stories as soon
She
gets on and, you know. It's just been an interesting couple of weeks, man. I just can't believe that here we go again, you know. And when you look at it, and I was talking about it with some people today, and I said, well, you know, they said it seemed like, well, we're public enemy number one again. I said, when have we stopped being public enemy number one? We've always been public enemy number one to certain people, let me say that. You know, there are some people who are not of that ilk, but then there are others who they passed on that racism and that hate and that bigotry through generations, and we're just experiencing firsthand from their younger generation that their older generation did to our elders and our ancestors. And, you know, they said the more things change, the more things stay the same. And it seems like it never, in fact, it never changed for those. It was always been the same. And it's weird because
always been the same, never changed, always the same drama, all of the same kind of things going on in that regards. And then folks want to wonder why our young people are still frustrated with the current state of affairs, but because they have seen their, as you just put it, their parents and their grandparents and even their great-grandparents, who they probably didn't even know in their lives, and definitely not their great-great-grandparents. And then they are saying, wait a minute, they went through that 100, 150, 200 years ago. We're still going through that same stuff. It might be a different brand of it, but it's still the same thing and all of that. And then they're wondering why people or get upset when the names of slaveholders need to be taken off buildings and everything, and then when they bring it up, then people, certain people get upset about it, and they're like, you know, we're just celebrating our heritage, whatever that heritage is and everything. You're like, well, you know, there's some heritages that don't need to be celebrated. We don't need to celebrate every bad guy that existed in the world and everything. I mean, let's try to uplift
right.
the positive folks and not try to be, like, sending out statues. Because, you know, sending out a statue to the Confederate general, in my mind, is almost the equivalent of having a statue to Adolf Hitler or Mussolini in certain places and everything. And they get real upset if those pop up. So, like I said, I don't see the difference if that.
it's no different. Even with the first, 13 presidents of the United States who were all slave owners. So, you know, the hell, I don't care, you know, call him on. Nah, man, even Abraham Lincoln, man, for him to say, you know what, if I could end this war and not release a single slave, I would. Man, you're not with us, man. Get the hell out of here. You get no love, man. You get no love either.
No love.
You know what I mean?
You get no love at all. And like I said, people forget about that aspect of history. And you're right, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, Hamilton, the whole gang of them had slaves and all of that. And then they want to get upset when people get mad about Aunt Jemima and the fact that Aunt Jemima is going off the stands and not being advertised the way that she used to be and everything. And then people want to be talking about how this person or that person's family was the ones that were making all of this money from that imagery and everything because they were African-American descent. And when you read about those families, they're like, we didn't really get as much as they thought we got, or we haven't seen those dimes, and we're not even sure that our relative would want to be associated in that kind of way. I mean, they might have done it at that time because they needed to survive, as we oftentimes know. We oftentimes do things just out of survival sense.
Yeah, we do, and then we got to deal with, you know, stuff getting taken or stolen and then repurposed, and they're claiming it as their own, and then next thing you know, yeah, of course they're not going to get as much money as, you know, we think it's supposed to be a higher value on it, but they don't. All they want to know is, how much can we rob you for?
How much can we rob you for, and how much can we do it and everything? I mean, I hate to put it, and I'm not trying to put this on the legacy of somebody that just recently passed and everything, but I'm really not going to be surprised if one of the marketing tools that we don't hear from, then it won't be immediate. It'll probably be like another year or two later. They'll probably might get somebody that's, you know, white, Latin American, or something other than from the hoods of New York and everything, but they might market them as having that street edge and that street toughness, that ability to know what's going on in the community and all of that, and then they will claim that this person is the white DMX or something like that. So they've done that to a couple of our artists, so I'm not going to be overly surprised if they don't do it to an icon like DMX, because I know they've tried it with others as well.
Here's your problem. Here's where they're going to run into the bullshit. You didn't have to fact check DMX. He told you what his demons were. He told you what his struggles were. But he also told you about his belief in a higher power. And he was just a real dude. Like, they didn't second guess, like, did he really do this? Let's check and ask this person or that person. It was what you saw was what you got. And they can try to repackage it. That's going to be a complete failure, man, because we don't want EMX. You know what I'm saying? There will only have been one, and there only will be one. There will not be another. There'll be some people that try to come in and, oh, this is how I am, and I'm telling you the truth. But eventually, all that stuff is going to catch up with them, and all the stuff will get exposed. And then what? You know what I mean? So they could try. You wasting your time.
Speaking of folks that have repackaged themselves, I was looking at one of the news feeds that I get was talking about an iconic figure in our community in terms of acting and everything else, played an iconic role played the role of a, I would just call him a super nerd and everything. He has now gone into the business of being in the cannabis industry. So apparently, and this is recent news, like in the last day or two, apparently Jaleel White, yeah, we know him as Steve Urkel in Family Matters, is entering the cannabis industry. Through a partnership with 710 Labs, White has his new cannabis line called It's Purple, featuring variants of the popular cannabis strain Purple Urkel. It is set to launch on April 20th. So next week, the brand will be on dispensary shelves in California to start potentially growing to marketplaces in the future. So Jaleel said, the thing that always stood out to me was that there was no clear brand leader for Fire Purple Weed. It made no sense to me that no company of significance has claimed this lane, so why not me? So he's saying that he did that, and folks are asking, how did this celebrity collaboration come by? And apparently it's like most collaborations. It was through a friendship. The 710 Lab founder met White on a flight, and the duo connected over their passion for cannabis. So they met and talked about their passion for cannabis, and that's how this whole new line is being launched. So that's going to be a big difference for folks that are used to the character of Urkel. Now we're going to have Purple Urkel that's going to be like this whole weed line and everything. So that's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how people perceive this when he had this certain kind of persona in the TV industry and everything as being the super nerd. And I don't know that the super nerd, his character would have even bothered smoking weed, but it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out in terms of marketing and also people's perceptions of Mr. Jaleel White now.
Hey, the man is smart, though, because a lot of places are going to start legalizing marijuana, and eventually federal government is going to say, you know what? All the states say it's legal. We're not going to put up that fight. What the hell is legal? It's going to blow up. So the issue will then become, how many black dispensaries do we have? And if Jaleel White is starting one, well, we know we got one and more to come. You know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah.
Hey, brother, if you can get your dollars off of that, because it's going to be a whole lot of, you're going to have a whole lot of business. I mean, you know, there are some people that have already been partaking of it, and then there'll be a few more that'll say, hey, it's legal now. I can go get me up to 6 ounces. I know in New Jersey they say you can have up to 6 ounces before it becomes, you know, legally. So, hey, it's going to be some people that decide that, hey, I'm going to start, you know, checking this out. One thing I will say, though, please, y'all, remember that weed is not a cologne. That's all I'm going to say, man. Like, you know, don't come in the establishment stinking and eyes all bloodshot red and looking crazy with your mouth hanging out. It's not a cologne, man. Like, it's not.
It's not a cologne, at least not that we're aware of anything, at least not that I'm aware of. There might be somebody that's making it into a cologne, but like you, I'm not aware of it. But there are certain brands, like I said, I have my own indulgences, maybe around drinks and things of that nature, certain beers and all of that, but never been one that was my indulgence. I don't knock people that's their indulgence. I have some good friends of mine who that's their choice of recreational habit and everything. But I can tell you that there are some people even in near my apartment complex and everything that I can literally tell when they're in the middle of this stuff, because they got that super duper bad weed that's got like the super cologne. So literally, you know, I can smell the odor even though they are above me. So like I said, and in some cases they're above me and one over. So we're talking about like they got that super duper bad cologne version that you're talking about, that you can like smell it through any crack. So as soon as they light up, I know what's going on just from being, and that's like, I can't even say it's like a contact time from being around them, because we're not even in the same space. I'm on the bottom level, they're on the top level, but whatever they blowing that super version that you can go through cracks and everything else. So like I said, I know what you're talking about when you say that there's some versions that need to be just calmed down a little bit.
Walk around smelling like a sewer, dog. Like, and they just think it's, nah, man, that's not that move. You know what I mean? It's just not that move.
Not that move at all. But you got some folks that think it's the move and think that they are you know, doing the super shit and everything just based on what they've got going on with that. But I'm with you. It's not the move and all of that.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
folks, still doing the super... Are folks still doing the super vaccine there? Because I know here we were having folks getting vaccinated left and right. I know my brother called me, speaking of people that were making calls, he called to see where I was in that process. And now that it's allowed for everybody, I may go get mine, but I haven't got it as of yet, even though I think all my immediate family members, meaning my brother, my two nephews, mom and dad, and their dad's significant mom's not in the middle of that situation, but their significance have all gotten their shots and everything. But I was just wondering where folks are in New Jersey. Is there like a rush for them, or are folks trying to be a little bit resistant?
Nah, you got a lot of folks trying to get it now. And when they first started giving them out, you know, there were some people saying, oh, it's not FDA approved, and it's not this, and it's not that. And as the cases kept rising and individuals started passing away, you know, I think it became real, like, hey, we have to do something. Because just wearing a mask and putting hand sanitizer everywhere is not doing it. So, you know, more people are trying to get it. You got some of the pharmacies now giving COVID vaccine and other places where, you know, you can go and get it. You still got to make your appointment, but fortunately, I got mine through work. By nature, my profession, they had it for all of us, and it was an option. You could take it, or you didn't have to. You know, it was not mandatory, but the majority of us did get it. Now, for those who were initially hesitant or resistant, they have to find their own, like, I'm trying to find some way to get the shot. And I'm like, had you done it when it was offered here, you wouldn't have to worry about trying to find a place now. But one thing I can tell you is try this place, try that place. They're going to send you on the wild group space now, but hopefully this will go. I know it's an uptick in cases now. They say like 70,000 new cases a day. So, you know, people kind of got a little free with it once they either got the vaccine or just got tired of wearing the mask. And then now you're not wearing anything and we have a problem again.
Yeah, that can be a problem again. And I know that even when I had the guest on the show earlier today, the radio show, like I said, the Crow is definitely one of those people that would be falling in the category with some of being considered a conspiracy theorist, because he was of the opinion that he's not buying the whole mask and germ thing. And I'm going like, well, I'm glad that's your opinion and that's the way you want to keep it, but I'm still sticking with wearing a mask every time that I go out. And he's one of a couple of guests that I've had on different shows that have said that, but I'm sitting there going like, that's y'all's prerogative. That's why they call it freedom of speech. But I'm not buying that particular argument, because he was basically like, it don't make no sense. You know, how can this little germ do this and that, and how can this and that? And he was basically being very skeptical in his approach about thinking that it was not a realism. But having had some folks that have definitely no longer on the planet because of it, I can definitely say that as far as I'm concerned, it's very real, and folks definitely need to be wearing those masks, you know, doing the hand sanitizing, if you can get the vaccine, doing everything else to get that herd immunity and actually get it solved so that we can get back to some semblance of normality. You know, even the new normal is not going to be totally normal, because I imagine we're going to have venues constantly still spraying themselves down, still doing hand washing, still doing everything else. So I just can't see it being something that's not going to be in our lives for at least another decade, in my opinion, but maybe it'll be less than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It will. I got sidetracked, man. I was flipping channels, and I don't know if you ever watched Hoarders before.
I have watched Hoarders before. Hey.
Bruh, these houses are the worst. I'd be afraid to go at them, and I'd be like, you know what? We just need to set all of this on fire and start over. My goodness.
And I mean, and we all have our bad habits. I would never put myself in that same category as those hoarders. I do know that I sometimes keep papers beyond their lifeline, and my brother may argue that I have some hoarding capabilities and everything, but it's not the state of, like, papers all over the house, because I have seen those shows where literally there's papers all over the place, and I do remember a person that I used to know drive through Durham, and they had a hoarder truck, I think it was more like a, the cars, the station wagon, because literally I think they used to do newspaper delivery, but if you got near their car, you would see all kinds of newspapers, you would see all kinds of food containers, all kinds of stuff, but it was all in that one station wagon and everything, and there was no telling what was underneath the papers and the boxes that were in the car. So imagine a car version of a hoarder, and that's what you had.
And was it space for probably not. It's probably like a one-seater car now.
Yeah, it's basically like a one-seater car.
Oh, man. I had a boss like that at one time who had a small car, and they had it full of junk. And it was like, come ride with me to the store. I was like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm just going to stay here. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to sit down in there. You throwing stuff in the back seat, but it's falling back in the front seat because you got so much stuff back there. And it's like, what are you going to do, man? When are you going to clean your car out? No wonder you, you know, feel like it's dragging because it's full of stuff. Your trunk is
full of junk.
Yeah, so now we're supposed to go pick up some stuff. I'm like, we can't even put it in the back seat. Who's going to carry that in their lap? Man, not me. So I tell you
what. So you weren't trying to do that at all?
No, not at all, man. I'm like, I'll just wait. If I have to wait out here till tomorrow, then I'll just wait out here till tomorrow. Because there's no way that I'm sitting on that trash or in that junk.
Yeah, and that would be the case and everything. So it looks like some things that were supposed to be helping people may have actually been hurting people, because I was just seeing a news article that says a new report issued last week provides new evidence the U.S. Department of Education and its loan servicers may have damaged the credit of thousands of student loan borrowers as it implemented a freeze on federal student loan payments last year. So this actually wasn't even under Biden. But apparently when they put the freeze on the loans and everything, it might have actually hurt the students, because it details a messy rollout of the CARES Act in March 2020, and definitely looks like some more mess that ARN person did. So the ARN person is still causing problems and everything. I know that a lot of people have been talking about how much kind of troubles Biden's been having in Latin America, and I'm like, well, the ARN person was already causing those troubles, so he kind of inherited it, that mess. Don't be trying to put it on him, this mess of these young people coming across the border from Mexico and other parts of Latin America, when the ARN person pretty much dared them to do it. So like I said, I'm not putting this on the current president. I think a lot of this still has to do with the past person that had that office as well.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But
yeah.
They've suspended them now till I think September, and the president is trying to find out if he can clear student debt through executive action. And I'm like, of course you can. You're the president, man. Stop playing. Like, you're trying to make up these little gun control laws. Just go ahead and wipe out that debt for us, man. You know what I mean? The COVID is taking over. People have lost jobs and everything else. So this will actually help a lot of people who actually owe on student loans, and it'll lift a burden off of some people, man.
Yep, lift that burden. I mean, they're going to have some new burdens, because I know one of the things they're talking about in Duke is that new students that are coming here next semester, they have to provide that documentation that they actually had their vaccine. You can't just come into the university and tell your dean or your different people in leadership that you had the vaccine. You actually physically have to have proof. And I think if you don't have the proof, they're going to be like, nope, you can't come into the campus. So they want physical proof that you actually had either the single or the double shot.
That's not a bad thing, though. That's
not
a bad thing.
Bad
if you're going to be around a lot of people, yeah, you may need to have that done.
Yeah, we need to know that you've done what you supposed to have had done and that it was done correctly. We don't need to be having it done, as the old folks used to say, half-ass and all of that. We need to make sure that it was done totally correctly and done in the correct way.
Yeah, please don't have acid.
No, go please don't. Don't do that at all. Get the some shots and everything. Yeah. On the sports side, how is your team doing? I know the 76ers are still playing well, so Doc seems to be doing good. The Clippers seem to be doing well and everything. And, of course, we just recently got the first black coach for UNC, that being Hubert Davis. I think that happened during the time that we were off and everything. So we got our first black coach over at UNC. So, you know, Roy Williams said, I've had enough, and he stepped down. And now Hubert will come up here and see what he's got to say, even though he's already put his foot in his mouth on a comment that he made, because Hubert is involved in a interracial relationship, and he was basically trying to say how much he loved his wife and how much he cared for his wife, but the way he phrased it definitely threw people a little bit off, because it was almost seeming like he was downplaying the whole Black Lives Matter movement and everything. So I get where he was trying to come from. And the fact is, you know, if you're in love, it doesn't matter who you're in love with, whether they're white, black, or purple, you're just supposed to be in love with them. But at the same time, I can also see where the optics might not have been what some people wanted to see when you're coming into a new leadership position as the head coach of a longstanding, historically successful program.
Yeah. That's true.
You got to watch those optics sometimes. Those optics will get you in trouble sometimes, because, you know, folks will be paying attention even when you think they're not paying attention to you.
You know what? But sometimes, though, you just say, you know what? I don't even care, man. I don't. Like, it may sound crazy, but when you look at it, what do the optics say? Is it true, or is it implied, or is it guesstimated that this is what's going on, or, you know, all those little things? And it's like, man, you know what? I just don't care. Whatever you think it is, all right, man. And let's go from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's go from there. Now, what is, because I have not been following all my news stories, but apparently a game was canceled today because of something that happened. And I don't know if that was because of the trial or just something in general. What happened in Minneapolis yesterday?
Oh, that's where the young brother was killed, man. So
okay,
that's how, like, you know what? We might not want to have nothing right now before they tear all this stuff up.
That makes sense, because they did say that earlier today that the two teams decided not to play the game. So now that you put it in that context, that makes sense. So they're not trying to inflame people's senses is everything. They want to make sure that everything is calmed down before they decide to go ahead and play some NBA games in what could be a potentially hostile environment.
Yeah, because it'll be something. It'll be something.
Hell yeah. Something would be jumping off one form or another, and we can't be having that. They'd be sitting there going like, but you said that it was okay. And he'd be like, no, I didn't.
Right.
The folks be having that attitude and everything. I know the other thing that I saw in the news that people were excited about, and I guess it was an example of the whole notion of fairness and equitability in sports and everything, was the fact that there is going to be a Japanese-American that won the Masters. I think he was the first one to win the Masters. And I don't think he was Japanese-American. I think he was actually from Japan. So I think he's actually from Japan, but he was a first to win the Masters. So a lot of people were excited about that earlier as well. So people are getting excited about that. And I just saw an article that actually the folks at Duke are being told that they are on solid legal ground in relation to the vaccination. So I'm sure somebody went to them asking them whether they could stand on their legs legally when they were requiring people to be vaccinated and everything, but apparently they have learned that they can legally require the students be vaccinated against coronavirus in order to be on campus, two lawyers said on Monday. So they had announced on Friday that all undergraduates, graduates, and professional students need to present present proof, not proof from last year, but present proof of vaccination before they can enroll for the fall semester. Documented medical and religious exemptions would be accommodated, but you know, you got to be able to tell them that you're not doing it for whatever medical or legal reasons that you how many religious reasons that you have, but Michael Stonefield, and actually I know him, I've served on a board or two with him, he said, we and every other college and university has a long record of requiring a number of immunizations and vaccinations. The bottom line is the vaccine is safe and it is effective, and Duke is among a small number of private universities nationwide to announce such requirements, and other universities that have done that include Notre Dame, Cornell, Brown University, and Syracuse in your neck of the woods.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang, man.
But yeah, the two lawyers, it looks like Scott Holmes and another lawyer have agreed that they are totally on their right to do that. Yeah, Daniel Meyer and Scott Holmes, who's a law professor at NCCU, have totally said that they are within their rights. Some universities across the U.S. have said they cannot require vaccinations because none of the available vaccines have been formally approved by the FDA, and all are being administered under emergency authorizations. Holmes says people may raise that in a legal challenge, but he doesn't think that argument holds much water. State law already requires some vaccines for public schools and universities. Even with respect to employment law, particularly private employers have the right to make these kind of requirements under these kind of circumstances as long as there is a business necessity. So it looks like they definitely have the grounds to stand on, and it looks like they won't get any sort of put back on that and everything of that nature. So I know that I texted her, so I'm expecting the phone to ring. So if you want to put on some music, hopefully by the time the music is done, she would have called in.
All right, well, we can do that. Let me try to find something over here real quick, man. And,
all right.
You know, we'll be back in a second.
Sounds good.
All right, bro. We are back. Are you there, Mark? We are back now, and at this point, we're going to bring in Pastor Dr. Gwendolyn Cook.
Right. Hello, Ms. Cook.
Thanks for calling Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. You are now on the line. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Yeah, my name is Gwendolyn Ann Cook. I'm calling from Camden, New Jersey. I am the executive director for WIT Youth at Risk Mentoring Program / Mothers Go Get Your Daughter.
Wow. Well, I love the title of the organization. Tell us a little bit more about, I know that you've known Dean and definitely his lovely wife for a while, but I'm just now getting to meet you and everything except for our phone conversations. But tell folks about this organization. I know that you recently had some work that you were doing that involved, unfortunately, a tragedy and all of that, but I do know that you're doing some very powerful work even around human trafficking, and a lot of times people don't even know how important an issue that is even to this day and everything. I was actually thinking about that recently because I saw I'm part of a film festival and there was actually a movie dealing with sex work and everything, and they were actually talking about the human trafficking aspect of that because one of the movies that was being possibly going to be shown in this particular festival dealt with somebody that was using that kind of work in order to get through their college education. And I even remember a famous case of somebody getting involved in something similar here in Durham and attending Duke University, but also having got caught up in that kind of lifestyle. So a lot of times we don't know how prevalent it can even be in our society, but you do this work on a regular basis. I'd love to know how you got involved.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, affording me the opportunity, you know, because I just want people to know, especially African-American people to know what's happening in their communities. Back in 2009, I was preaching at a church, and a young lady came up to me after the service and asked if I would come speak to her girls. And I said, sure, you know, you let me know what you need me to do. And so she says, well, my girls are in prison. And so, you know, I laughed and I says, well, if you can get me in the prison, then I'm there. And I had the opportunity to go into the prison. I launched this program inside of the only female juvenile prison in the state of New Jersey in June of 2009.
Wow. And you said that's the only one that was in that area at that particular time, and has there been any since that time that have opened that are doing similar kind of work that you've kind of like helped create more of the need? Because like I said, I'm oftentimes shocked when I talk to people in this field, and we've had people like Veronica Hardy's, who's done some of this work in the field of human trafficking and works in North Carolina. She actually lives in Lumberton, which is a small town connected to one of our universities and everything, but she's also done work there in the Northeast. So a lot of times people, like you said, aren't even aware of how prevalent it is in our community. So how prevalent would you say it is, and are there any statistics that you can give our listeners to let us know how devastating an issue it is to our community?
Well, human sex trafficking is the fastest growing crime in the country. And in saying that, the largest percentage of victims, which, you know, a lot of African Americans don't even know, the largest percentage of victims are minor African American females. But then we also have the largest percentage of predators are African American males.
Wow.
Because of the money involved, it's a $32 billion annual industry.
Wow. And I know that on one of the networks that belong to International Broadcast Media, we had a young lady that was involved in she's a wife of a football player, and she's part of one of those organizations where wives and girlfriends and daughters of the football players are in conversations. But even it's been an issue in her community, because she was doing the interview that I was having with her, was mentioning the fact that she actually got seduced into being part of basically a human trafficking situation herself. And like I said, a lot of times people won't even think about that. And I want to say she was still and is currently married to the football player and everything, but I want to say that at the time that the incident happened, she was married. I think they've been married and divorced, but now are remarried and everything. But I do think that a lot of times it's very much in, like you said, prevalent society, even in our music and our sports industries as well. So I'm thinking that that's part of what you've had to deal with also, even in talking to these young ladies.
Yeah. You know, it's sad to say that, you know, this crime is everywhere, and it seems like, you know, different programs are just popping up, you know, and people are saying, well, I'm a sex trafficking agency, I'm a provider. But, you know, there is a great deal of government funding that's made available, especially in communities of disparity. You know, like, for instance, the city that I am in, my headquarters is in the city of Camden, which has been considered to be the poorest city in America, yet having the highest crime rate in the nation. So this is a crime that, you know, everybody's trying to get a piece of the pie, And, you know, I meet people every day. I get calls often from across the, you know, country in reference to their program, which I find a lot of times a lot of the programs, even the ones that are here in Jersey, are not really offering the help that's needed in the Black communities, because I often say if the largest percentage of my girls were white, I would have probably several commercials and several, you know, digital billboards throughout the county. But that is not so, and that's why a lot of these young girls, you know, they say, you know, nobody cares about me. And, you know, we try to do what we can to show them that, yes, there are people, you know, people like yourself. You guys care about them. You bring me on your program so I can bring awareness.
Right. No doubt about that. We definitely care about these young ladies and everything. One of the things I was going to ask you is that I know here in North Carolina where I'm at and everything, and definitely just around the South, but I would even argue the Northeast as well, sometimes, and I know that you're a minister and everything, sometimes our church leaders give lip service toward helping those that are poor and distraught, but they don't always do a good job of backing their word. Like I said, you're doing a great job. I would argue Reverend Barber is doing a great job as well, but how are you doing in terms of getting your community leaders to support your efforts, whether that's political leaders or whether that's fellow church leaders or just community activists in general? Because I do know that sometimes there are certain issues that community leaders like to wipe underneath the rug because it's not the quote-unquote glamour issue and all of that, and it might have some other kind of nuances and things that people are concerned about even talking about the issue. So I just wonder how you are finding in terms of dealing with our leadership.
You know what? It's not the way it should be. I run into brick walls when I try to get their support, you know, in reference to, and then when I get an opportunity to speak in a church, you know, to a congregation, you know, I often say if your pastor is not educating you on sex trafficking on Sunday or a midweek service, you need to pick up your little offering and you need to leave, because I believe that you need to know what's happening outside the doors. A large percentage of our girls they were raised in church.
Okay.
And until the church really, you know, starts talking more about it. I mean, we just not too long ago had two pastors in Philadelphia that, hey, are doing 30 years now. They were trafficking girls out of their youth ministry program.
And I know that that's something that we heard about particularly last year and I guess early part of this year within the Catholic Church, and I actually went to a Jesuit university. But it sounds to me like you're saying that it's not just a issue within that particular part of the church community, but it probably also exists within the Baptist community and some other communities as well, because we definitely know that we heard the horror stories of what priests were doing to the altar boys and others and everything. But we also know that a lot of times that kind of activity, whether it's with men or women, can happen right in our own churches and everything. And a lot of times even the congregation members might even know what's going on, but there's fear of reprisal and fear of other things that they don't want to get involved in everything. So when you talk to congregations and you might even get signals that there are things going on, what is your advice to congregation members in order for them to stamp out this evil that is throughout society?
Well, you know, this is a conversation that many of them don't want to talk about, and but it's happening, and it's happening within their churches. You asked them, you know, to really take a look at these young girls that they, you know, have missing. Like, for instance, if you got some, you know, 13 and 14 youth who had been at one time faithfully committed to the ministry and then you don't see them for a while, I think you need to investigate and find out where they are.
Okay.
You know, but they don't want to talk about the fact that this can happen as if it's going to bring a blemish or a stain on their ministry. But like I said, even when I first start going into the prison, the largest percentage of girls in the prison, 98% of the girls that were incarcerated were female African American youth, and they were in prison for prostitution, you know. And the law states that, you know, there's no such thing as a minor prostitute. Her brain is not in a position to consent to having sex with a 55-year-old man.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely not the case in everything. And then we also know that, and I imagine this is part of the human trafficking as well, that, you know, in addition to prostitution being around forever, at least since the making of movies and everything, pornography has been out there, and there's definitely a seems a rise in that kind of pornography that is geared toward teenagers, or that has teenagers, and in some cases even much younger kind of folks as well. So is that something that you're having to fight also, is fight against the quote-unquote blue industry, or whatever folks might want to call that particular movie industry? Because I do know that a lot of times those actors are not the ages that they claim to be, and in some cases they don't even pretend to be a certain age, because I've even read articles where some of them are literally talking about being in that youth area and everything.
Yeah, well, we run into that as well. It's just truly a ugly crime, and I mean, it's happening everywhere. It's in your neighborhood. Matter of fact, I have one of my former employees who's in North Carolina, you know, who they reached out to me because one of our girls from Camden, she got transported to North Carolina. A lot of people associate the movie Taken to sex trafficking, but there's no Taken our little girls anywhere. Matter of fact, some of our girls continue to go to school, and they're being trafficked. And they're being trafficked right there in their neighborhood. A lot of community members, and that's where we get our referrals from, when a community member identifies something that doesn't look right, and then they alert us. And then what our agency does, we rescue and assist. You know,
right.
We go in and rescue these girls. You know, of course, we work with all entities of law enforcement. Because this has become a major crime. And then with having the illegal immigrant children that are also being trafficked within these communities. So, I mean, it's happening so often and so quick. You know, matter of fact, I just received a national victims of crime Rights Act, a grant, and it's to let victims of crime, let them know what their rights are as a victim. And I received that for the city of Camden. And just the fact that the crime is so, the numbers are just outrageous on what's happening to our children. A lot of times the parent, the mother has been traffic. So then we run into what you call a generational a trauma, that the trauma is passed down to the child, and then you have all this trauma living in these little bodies, which sometimes my 12 and 13-year-old girls, you know, they say, you know, it's my body. I can do with it what I want to do with it. So, you know, we have to deal with the mind, and we have to really be able to discern where they've been and help them to understand that this is not their plot for life as a victim.
Right, definitely not, and everything. Because one of the things I was curious about, well, a couple of things. One, I'm glad you brought up the immigration, because I know that that's been another way that we've been hearing more and more over the last month or so, ever since those young folks were coming across the border from Mexico. The vast majority of them without parental, backings, without coming to all across the border with their mom and dad, but they might have had other adults with them. So I know there was a lot of speculation about the fact that many people feel that there is definitely some human trafficking being involved in that. And then the other thing that I was curious about to hear from you is, I know a lot of times we talk about the nature of our education system and everything, and I'm wondering if that is also another part of the community's voice that we need to hear from. Because I remember, I'm in my late 50s, that growing up there were definitely courses around sex ed, but they also talked about some of the other aspects of the negative things that might happen with that whole sexual knowledge. So not just, they would warn you about, like, the possibility of kidnappings and, of course, the sex diseases and things of that nature. I don't know that the schools are doing nearly enough of that as they used to, but that's just my personal opinion, and I was wondering whether you're finding any resistance from education and the school system and the school boards when you try to bring up the issue as well.
Well, you know what? We have partnered with, you know, the school district in Camden and Cumberland County, and they have welcomed us in, and we get a lot of our victims out of elementary schools because we're able to go in and do awareness presentation. I did a awareness presentation in a charter school in the city of Camden, which there were over 200 girls in this presentation, and at the end of, you know, the presentation, I asked the question, did any of these girls, do you know anybody who's being trafficked? Are you yourself, have you been trafficked? And believe it or not, over 100 girls raised their hand. I mean, it was even, you know, shocking to the principal and the administrators in the school.
Well, so, and I imagine
And so they're inviting us in schools because the numbers of trafficking has escalated so high that, you know, you just can't tell, you know. And right. And you have the trafficker is using other minor children to lure and bring in other children within the school system.
Because I imagine that with all that you've been doing this work for a number of years, that this is definitely something that weighs on your own heart, and definitely you find it hard to even do this kind of work, but it's necessary work that must be done. So how are you able to, on a personal level, even cope with the various tragedies that you have to put up with? Like I said, I know that we were supposed to have this interview a couple of weeks ago, and you were in the middle of a tragedy in that case as well. I believe the young lady had lost her life and everything. So I was definitely wondering how you're able to even cope during these hard times, and particularly in this very difficult field that you are working in.
Yeah, and I just want to say she didn't lose her life. Someone took her life.
Right.
You know, someone walked into her house at 3 o'clock in the morning, tied her up, and shot her multiple times, you know. This is a young survivor of sex trafficking who had changed her life, who, you know, went to school, had a good, decent job, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's hard to get out of the life. You know, once these traffickers get into your head, they lie to you and they say that, you know, this is going to happen or that is going to happen. And these young minds believe those lies. You know, a lot of girls are staying in because they think that they're protecting their families. I've had some girls stay in because they believe they were protecting me. You know, I've had traffickers waiting outside my car when I get off. I've had them come into my office.
Well, because I know here in this area we have, I'm sure there's a decent traffic population here in Durham and around the Triangle area, just knowing what kind of workforce is here and the other kind of clues that folks can have about traffic and everything. But I know that there is definitely a heavy gang population here and everything, and I've also heard people say that same thing about the gangs and the fact that they feel that that's their only way to be accepted. I'm imagining that's some of the same thing that you're hearing from those young ladies that are getting involved in this work, is that this is their means of trying to be accepted by a greater society, not understanding the serious harm that they are putting on themselves. So I was just wondering if you could share some of the messaging that you give to the young ladies to get them out of that, and also what kind of message would you give to folks that are getting caught up in that gang environment? Because like I said, I know my brother works with gang kids, and I know others in our area that work with gang kids, but sometimes when you talk to them, it's almost like they feel that that's their only way to be accepted.
Well, what we have to do in our program, we had to offer them something different, you know, and I found that the programs that we offer them, once we get them, you know, we get their attention, we bring them into an environment where the girls are into makeup. We have a cosmetology program, and if they stay committed to the program, then they, you know, they can get certified, get their license, and become cosmetologists. You know, we have a sewing program. Some of the girls want to be designers. So we are able to really keep them committed to the program because of the things that we offer them. And I believe that the effects of poverty, you know, which continues to persist, you know, into adulthood, it is the fact that if we're going to address human trafficking, we have to address trafficking in our communities. You know, and that along with, you know, poverty, racism, gender-based violence, and all of these things have to be looked at. And that's where the gang violence comes in. And in Camden, there is a large percentage of gang violence. I remember speaking to, you know, the chief of police, and he's telling me, you know, that crime's down, you know, drugs and guns are, you know, that. But see, they've done moved on. You know, they've turned from, you know, selling guns and drugs to now selling our children. And so right. If you're not looking for a trafficking situation, you're not going to find one, because that's why they call it a hidden crime, because people try to do it secretly. You got people that you work with every day. They got a basement full of little girls coming in and out of they're trafficking in their own homes. These are, you know, educators, you know, judges. But in our community, it's the African-American males that have turned to this hideous crime, and they don't seem to think that there is a problem with messing up the mind of an 8-9-year-old little girl.
And I wonder if part of that isn't, and I was wondering your thoughts about this, because I've had this conversation with others more in the education field, but definitely some activists as well, that sometimes, and definitely some of our religious leaders, we almost give like mixed messages in the way that we tell both men and women about both human trafficking, about the crime in general, as well as definitely just about sex life and relationships in general. It's almost like we're sending these mixed messages to our two genders, and I think that that causes a problem and creates kind of a disturbance that allows more of this kind of stuff to happen in society where, you know, like I know, I'm not saying all churches, but in some churches you'll have the men that are encouraged to basically, I'll use the old phrase in the old song, shop around and everything like that, and then they'll tell the young women, you know, to be pure as driven snow, and that's almost like a message that doesn't quite resonate if you're telling people opposite messages. So I just wondered, do you feel that that can sometimes be a problem also in creating kind of the firestorm that allows these things to happen?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. We have to speak the same language, and we have to speak it loud, you know, and not be afraid to talk about it. You know, I have a 7-year-old. When she was 4 years old, I had her do a sex trafficking video. And the reason why, I'm also a law enforcement chaplain, I was called to the emergency room because a victim came in of trafficking. And when I got there, that victim was 4 years old. Her mother had a drug problem, and her mother was selling her 4-year-old daughter. You had grown men buying this baby. And, you know, to walk into ICU and see a little 4-year-old with her legs put up in you know, and I mean, just, you know, sticks the hole because they traumatized her little vagina. And so then we, you know, find out other situations in the community where, you know, men are sexually violating 8-month-old babies, 2-year-old little girls, you know, and all traffickers are not males. You know, there are women traffickers. You know, I've ran into a few women traffickers. But the thing about it is, we have to talk about it, because I believe that if we don't start addressing this, it's going to get worse. I mean, here I am running all over New Jersey doing human sex trafficking presentations throughout the entire state, and my own niece becomes a victim of human sex trafficking. So, you know, it can happen to anyone, because these guys are desperate. They're desperate for the money. You know, you got family members selling their cousins for $500. It's just, you got fathers. I just got off a case. Well, it's still my case, but a father who's a councilman that was having sex with his 16-year-old daughter and then allowing his friends. But not only was he a councilman, he was a pastor too and had a church, but the deacons and the elders were able to violate his 16-year-old daughter.
Oh, that's just amazing, the fact that there would even be that kind of crimes going on, and just the way you're describing them is definitely heartbreaking to, I'm sure, our listeners and a lot of other folks that are checking out what we're saying. But it sounds like one of the things that you're saying is that it's across, a lot of times people try to put these kind of things within a class environment. They think that it only happens into, like, those that are in the poor environments or those that are in, like, the lower class. But it sounds to me that what you're saying is that it can happen to somebody even in the lower class of society, or somebody that might be in the big mansions that we don't even get to see what they've got going on in their houses, because there's so much behind gated communities and all of that. So it does seem like this is a problem across society. Am I correct in that?
Oh, definitely, yes. That's why we see people like Jeffrey Epstein that was able to get away with this for so long. And even when it was identified with him, you know, he was able, because he had the money, you know, to buy his way out. But you have the wealthy men in our communities that, you know, you don't get to go behind those fences and go down in those cul-de-sacs and see what's going in and out of there. And then you have, like in Camden, you have like projects, and you have, like, for instance, they have what you call as a North Gate Tower. This is a tower with like 20 floors of apartments. And so, you know, they're in there selling girls, especially because of the shut-in, because the COVID-19 has created a horrendous problem in getting to these girls. Some of these girls are quarantined and locked in, shut in with their the perpetrator, their trafficker.
And that's what I was going to ask you is, if no matter where you are in society, if you see something that you might be suspicious of, what are some of the things that you recommend people do? I know that here in Durham, I was actually helping a friend of mine who is a door dasher and everything and does that whole food delivery. But I remember that there is a neighborhood that is somewhat sketchy. Nobody has given me a concrete answer as to what's going on in there, but it definitely seems like it's a compound kind of environment. Even the dashers have to stop at a certain location and everything in order to drop off the food. Now, that to me sounds like it could be suspicious activity, but I haven't heard of law enforcement taking any action or anybody else taking action, but just seems to be like, just as I was traveling with this friend of mine, that it seemed somewhat suspicious in our minds. But I was just wondering if people are seeing things like that or seeing things that they might be wondering about, how do you suggest that they deal with those? Because I know in her case, I think she just kind of like let it be. And as far as I know, that property is still doing whatever they're doing. And like I said, it could be something totally innocent, but I just do, in my mind, it seemed a little suspicious.
Right, and that's why when we see something, we have to say something, you know, because you never can tell. Now, there's always, there's the National Trafficking Hotline, a number that you can call. You don't even have to say your name. Let them know what you see, where you saw it at, and let the professionals go. Nobody's asking you to go knock on the door to find out, okay, is trafficking going on in here? No, all you need to do is give them the information. There are agencies like mine throughout all communities. You know, somebody is out there that you can connect with. And I often tell people, like, for instance, in the city of Camden, it has 73,000 residents, but it also has 277 tier three sex offenders. Three poses a high risk that they will commit new crimes. And most people don't look at that. You know, you go on the registry wherever you live and find out is, you know, if he's next door, is he three
right.
houses down?
And how active are those registries? I've heard people that have looked up those registries and have wondered about those registries. But how active and how correct in your mind are those registries? Because I do know that sometimes people will say that they don't know that everybody is recorded, or and then if they are recorded, they don't know what to deal with it. Like I said, I live in an apartment complex, so I imagine there are probably people in an apartment complex that might even fall in that category. But, of course, people are moving constantly from place to place, so that's the other issue, is that if people are moving from place to place, they might be in this apartment this year and another apartment next year and everything. So in your opinion, how accurate are they in terms of keeping track of people?
Well, you know what? They're pretty accurate, but we have to be pretty accurate. What we have to do is we have to go to that site, that sex offender site, and we need to check. And then we need to call our law enforcement office if we find out, because, see, these people aren't supposed to live nowhere near kids, especially near no school.
Right.
But we found them in our searches. They have been able to live close to schools because no one has, you know, complained. We got to start complaining, because apparently these guys who do this, they have a problem. They have a mental problem, because, you know, we did a research in Camden, and out of the 277 sex offenders, the tier three were there because, first of all, they were violent with their victim, and their victim was way under the age of 10.
Wow. It's just amazing that they were well under that age and everything, and folks weren't even thinking about that in the case of what was going on. Another thing that I was curious about, and I was wondering your thoughts about this, is that I know a lot of times, to some degree, law enforcement, and particularly our police and our police leadership, become stars in their own right. And I know that a lot of times the criminal element is pretty much, they don't, I'm not saying they don't move, like go from city to city or things like a lot of other jobs do, but a lot of times they're in their own environment. So I'm sometimes wondering if the fact that leadership, particularly on our police level, can become so star-oriented, that becomes also a problem when you're trying to deal with human trafficking and things of that nature. Like, I know here in Durham, we may be losing our police chief, who's been doing a lot of work to work against gangs and everything, because she's become a star in the legal profession. So now she may be moving to Memphis, Tennessee, which means that now we've got to find somebody else to come in here, potentially, if assuming she gets the job, and they haven't declared her the winner of it yet. But if she gets the job, then we might have to find somebody else to start the whole ball again and start the whole dialogue again, whether it's with the gangs, whether it's with the people that are fighting on human trafficking, whether it's whatever, whereas the elements of the criminal element always are pretty much where they are. You know, unless somebody is eliminated through their own turf wars, they're pretty much there for the duration, whereas the police force, it's like, you know, any other job. People are always shifting and all of that. So I was wondering, does that become an issue even in trying to fight against human trafficking, in your opinion?
That definitely becomes an issue, and that's why you have to work with the community resident. You got to work with the people in the community. You have to often train them, bring them together, let them know, you know, what's going on in the area of trafficking, so that, you know, I don't think that I could do what I do if it wasn't for the volunteers and the people in the community, because when they see something, they may be afraid to call that national trafficking hotline, but they're not afraid to call my hotline. And so that's how we get a lot of our girls, is from a neighbor, you know, calling, say, hey, this car just went down the road, and they just threw this little girl out, you know, on the street, you know, and if the community's not talking, because the community members will talk to us before they talk to the police.
Right, and I think that that's the case with a lot of folks, is that they'll talk to the organizations, particularly the organizations that are doing the work, and in some cases, people that have actually gone through that same kind of lifestyle as well. And I know here in this area, some of our best anti-gang programs are run by people that used to be in the gangs. In some cases, they even serve time in the gangs, so therefore they have a better understanding of what people are going through. And I imagine the same thing with human trafficking, that some of the people that you are definitely working with, some of your fellow co-workers and everything, have come out of that human trafficking environment, so they are therefore able to relate and have a better conversation with the victims and everything, because they've lived that lifestyle.
Yeah, and that is so true, and that's why when we get them, you know, I'm glad to say that we're able to keep them. You know, we've had girls that were in prison in 2009 when we started. They're still in our program, you know, and they are really good with, you know, mentoring, you know, the young girls that are coming in. With the people in the community, training the people in the community, they want to know, they want to help. You know, I do at least 100, except last year with, you know, everything that was going on with the pandemic, I would do over 100 human trafficking presentations throughout the state of New Jersey. But I would also work side by side with the FBI, you know, because I always feel as though they legitimize, you know, they validate who we are, because of course, you know, you're gonna listen to somebody carrying a gun rather than somebody who's carrying passion. You know, I walk with passion, they walk with weapons.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense and everything, and I know that you're doing some amazing work and definitely working on helping folks on a regular basis, and I know we still got about another 10 to 15 minutes, but I think I had one other caller that was calling in as well, so I did want to get a chance to hopefully get Khalil in to the conversation and just have a general conversation, so don't hang up on me, but is Khalil still there, just so I can remember all of my guests, because I'm always inviting people, and sometimes I forget who I've invited.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Khalil, how are you doing?
Doing okay.
So tell us a little bit about your career and what you've got going on and everything, because like I said, we've been talking about a number of great issues. Me and Dean were just having a general conversation earlier, but then, as I was just saying, I was talking to Mrs. Gwen about what she's doing in terms of helping fight against this awful thing that is going on in our society with human trafficking.
Well, see, I don't have a career, but I kind of wish that I worked. I wish that I had went to college, and I wish that I worked for the ATF. But, see, one of the things I wish that we had in society that could cut down on less gun violence is bullets that could dissipate in the air so it wouldn't hit an innocent person. And they wouldn't hurt unless they got really hot. It would just knock you out, and it would buy some time to save the bad guy. But it would cut down on less... It will cut down on less gun violence, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know whether there have been any talks of that. I know that there have been definitely within law enforcement, and Dean would know better than I, some of those kind of like bullets that are able to not necessarily have the traditional bullet version. And I know that law enforcement definitely has some of those bullets that I'm thinking about, like those rubber bullets and definitely mace and other things that exist in that regard. So, Dean, that's actually more a question for you as to what kind of things, and maybe even our primary guest can talk about what she's learned from law enforcement about what they're doing when they're fighting against things that are, because I do agree that gun violence can something that has been a major issue in our society, particularly in this day and time.
Are you asking what kind of bullets we have in law enforcement?
No, I was just saying. I kind of wish that I had went to college and studied. That way, I could have made something that would cut down on less gun violence, like bullets could dissipate in the air,
mm-hmm.
instead of just going straight. Because I don't like when they go straight, because a lot of innocent people have gotten hit by it.
True. Very true.
Yeah, that's very
also,
much true. That's, yeah, go ahead.
Also, I was just curious. I don't know. I was told that when you are, like, on the ATF is the only people that are allowed to, like they're the only ones that are allowed to have, like, facial hair, like goatees and things like that. Like in the federal law enforcement?
I'm not sure. I'm not in federal law enforcement, but a lot of law enforcement agencies now are allowing, you know, the growing of mustaches and beards. There may be restrictions as to how far you can grow them, but, you know, they're realizing now that a lot of individuals, if they were not to have facial hair, would have to keep shaving profiles.
Yeah. But
that makes a lot of
sense. One of the things that I probably, it would be good to come up with something like that to cut down on gun violence, but the NRA, they would not want something like that. Because you had, like, a situation where you had a choice between smart guns and regular guns, and the NRA blocked that.
Yeah, they blocked a lot of different things, and that's one of the things I was going to ask our primary guest and everything is, how have you been dealing in terms of getting support from the federal government for fighting against human trafficking? Because I know that it wasn't an issue, and like I said, I've known other people like Sonic Slaughter that have been involved in this fight and everything, but unfortunately, I don't know that we're seeing it become like a national issue. Like, you know, we talk about the issues that people pay attention to, and that even our past presidents, as well as some current presidents, have dealt with, including immigration, including a number of other things, but I haven't seen them really put a push about human trafficking. So is this something that you would like the federal government to be more involved in, and do you think that there is enough involvement as it is?
Well, I think that they're involved, and I appreciate it, because my organization wouldn't be this successful if I didn't have funding. The funding that I get comes from VOCA. VOCA is federal money to the states, and it's from criminals, you know, who are arrested, you know, with drug money, and this money in turn goes to a nonprofit organizations that are working in the community to help prevent crime and to provide service to crime victims. So, you know, and there is so much money out there for agencies, even if you want to start a program in order to help combat human trafficking, there's federal funding that you can apply for. So, I mean, I do appreciate what's out there. In everything, I believe they need to do more, but I'm really satisfied because there are some agencies that have been around providing service to human trafficking victims, you know, and they get those $30 million grants.
Well, what do you think are some of the number one misconceptions people have about this horrible crime and everything? Because I know a lot of times people are oftentimes trying to find ways to glamorize the drug trade. There's no way in hell, excuse my language, that you can glamorize human trafficking. But what are some of the ways or misconceptions that you think people have about the whole human trafficking crime? I know one of the things is that a lot of times people feel that it's a issue that's not impacting our community, and you've already discounted that. And I also know that I've heard sometimes heard people think that it's only strictly a lower class issue, and it seems to me that you've disbanded that complaint as well, because it can happen to anybody, no matter whether they're white, black, purple, young or old, man or woman. And I have actually run across some folks that were women that told me that they were seduced by women into the human trafficking. So I do know that what you said earlier about women being involved as human traffickers is also very real. But I was just wondering some of the other misconceptions that you have been made aware of.
Well, you know, one of the major misconceptions is people think that once these women or girls are lured in and that they don't leave, that they want to be there. They want to be trafficked, you know, because they think it's so easy for these girls to just get up and say, well, I don't want to do this no more. But that is not the case. You know, they can't just leave. Matter of fact, some of them We've had 12 and 13-year-old girls that have been introduced to heroin and end up with a heroin addiction. And in order to, you know, get that next hit, they're going to do whatever these traffickers want them to do.
Right.
But
and the other thing,
just, you know,
yeah,
they can't just leave. Many of them just can't. You just can't say, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And that's why we have one of our girls got murdered a few weeks ago.
Right. And that's one of the things I was curious about is I know we're talking about human trafficking in the sense of human sex trafficking, but I've also heard, you know, I'm not that far. I'm literally probably about a block and a half away from Duke University, and I've heard that there's definitely cases of people that have been trafficked into what I call job trafficking, meaning that they are working in certain jobs, sometimes even low-end jobs. And a lot of times when people think of that, they think of the farmers. But I've heard that there have actually been people that have been trafficked into working on what would amount to menial jobs, like maybe janitorial or those kind of jobs, and I'm not knocking those jobs because everybody needs to make a living, and I'm definitely not saying that I've not worked in those fields as well, because even my job at one of my cultural arts centers, I have to do some janitorial work and everything. But I'm just wondering, do you sometimes feel that people discount that part of the trafficking as well? Because I do know that there have been conversations about some of that type of trafficking that could even be going on at, say, a Duke or a Harvard or a Yale or some of our various big league universities.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had girls, I've helped to raid African hair braiding salons, nail salons, you know, massage, you know, parlors and whatnot. So there is a lot of labor trafficking, you know, where
right.
they have these young girls working in these little shops and, you know, not paying them anything, especially runaways.
Right.
Runaways are normally both sex traffic and labor traffic because they're looking for some place to lay their head or some food to eat. So it turns into survival sex.
Right. And that's what I was talking about was I was thinking about the labor ones and those that are put into those labor situations and things of that nature. And we also know that there's a rising in the country homeless population. So I'm imagining that that is also playing into the rise in human trafficking. So can you talk about how maybe the rise in homelessness and the rise in child poverty is also playing into the greater picture of human trafficking?
Well, it has because a large percentage of our girls were homeless. They were runaways, and, you know, and many of them, you know, just thrown away. You know, and that's why when we rescue a girl and I get to meet, whether it be the parent, you know, the god of relative or grandmother, you know, because with their behavior, you know, a mom will say, well, I can't deal with this no more. She got to go. She got to live. And I often tell them, well, I mean, why don't you get the resources and the help that you need to keep her here rather than have the FBI come and knock on your door and ask you to come down to the coroner's office and to, you know, view a body? Because there is too much homelessness, and believe it or not, the percentage of homelessness in the African-American community, I'm talking about our children, I think that is just ridiculous. I grew up, I'm a Southern girl, I'm from Kentucky. You ain't throwing away your baby. You ain't saying, you know, putting your baby out there because, you know, she was bad at school or something like that. It's just too many. It is so easy for parents to just, you know, discard their children these days. You know, so we're running around, and it's hard to find housing these days because most of them are filled. You know, nobody has beds anymore. You know, I'm working now to try to get a facility that would help house some of these girls that we meet on a regular, you know, every day. Somebody's calling me. I had a call last night, a runaway, you know, and I wanted to help her. She was supposed to call me back, and, you know, she didn't call back, and she's out there and a minor, you know, so homelessness. And you know, churches, even, you know, prior to the pandemic, you know, you couldn't find too many churches that were open on a Tuesday afternoon. And, you know, it's not like the kids can go to to lay down in church, or to, you know, to find a safe haven or something like that. You know, we just have to do better with our kids, you know, because they'll become adults, and that's how they end up incarcerated doing 20, you know, 30 years.
Yeah, and definitely we got to do better on that. I know that one of the Clintons, I can't remember whether it was Bill or Hillary, was always talking about the village and things along that line and everything, and it seems to me that that's something that we definitely need to get back to and everything, and this whole concept of raising by not just your own immediate family. I know that I've definitely always concerned about what's going on, not just with, I have no kids, but I'm concerned about what's going on with my nephews, but I'm also concerned about, like, my friends' kids as well. And one of the things that we've talked about is that if one of them was in trouble and I saw them in trouble, I would definitely be feeling obligated almost to talk to them about what was going on and to warn them out of that situation. But I don't think that we have enough of that going on in society. So would you agree with me on that, that that's something we need to do better at, is actually coming back to that old days of actually being a true community? And I think that we've gotten away from that in the African-American community, and particularly that Southern tradition that I know I'm part of, having been born and raised in North Carolina, and I know even to some degree Dean has those Virginia roots and everything. So definitely I think that's something that we all have had in the past that I don't see enough of currently. So do you think that that's something that we need to do a better job of, is being a true community within our African-American community?
I really think that we should. We have to bring that village concept back, because there's too many kids out there. And see, the thing about it is, whether you know it or not, they're a target. Those traffickers have watched these kids, and they see them not having any, you know, steady housing available to them, and so they watch them, and then they seize the opportunity to lure them in with promises that they definitely won't keep. You know, I have talked to people who have seen things, and they. I thought it was sex trafficking, but, you know, but that was last week. You know, so I asked, how can you see something and not make a call? You know, you don't have to go help this girl, you know, if you're afraid of the situation, but do at least make a call. Make somebody aware that that does not look right.
Yeah, definitely had to do that. Now, if somebody had either a house or had, like, seen some of the things that are going on, whether that was in Camden or wherever, how would they reach you? And are you pretty much only serving the Camden area, or are you serving elsewhere?
You know what, it's funny how, you know, I'm working on a few cases out of Sacramento right now. I'm working out of one, my goodness, several in Atlanta. So I'm trying to set up different agencies. I'm training women in these other communities throughout the, so that we can have programs right there in the neighborhood, whereas there's help for them. And I find that the mentoring is the best thing that can happen, because what we do is once we identify a girl, we do the intake, and then we match them with a mentor, which is an adult woman, you know, a professional woman, and that woman has to commit to availing herself to this girl 24/7. If this girl calls at 2:00 in the morning, you got to respond. We are a crisis, you know, agency, so we have to respond. You know, the crime just don't happen between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. It can happen at any time. But when I receive a call from another state, then I get on the phone and I reach out to the National Trafficking Hotline, and then they, in fact, connect me with an agency within those communities, so then I can find out how we can provide help for this situation, no matter if it's in New Jersey or if it's in Wisconsin or no matter Kentucky, wherever it is. We try to, you know, service, you know, any child, no matter where they're from.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and you're doing some great work in that regard. And we got to get ready to wrap up and everything. If folks are wanting to reach you, how do they reach you? And what's the email or the website for the organization if they've heard this conversation or if they hear it in the repeat and they're interested in learning more? And I'd love to have you come back on both this show as well as on some of the streaming podcasts that I do to continue this dialogue, because definitely I think it is a very important issue that needs to be addressed on a regular and consistent basis. But if you can share how the folks can reach you.
Well, they can call me at 609-781-2026. I'll repeat that, 609-781-2026. And the website for trafficking is Mothers with an S. GoGetYourDaughters.org, MothersGoGetYourDaughters.org, and then WITS, W-W-I-T-S, MentoringProgram.org, W-W-I-T-S, MentoringProgram.org. And we are a hotline, so if there's something we can do it for you at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., don't hesitate, because we believe in saving a life one girl at a time.
And definitely, like I said, doing amazing work. Glad to meet you first on the phone the first time and now here on the air. And like I said, definitely hoping to have you come back both on this show, and I understand that you're going to be on Dr. April's show later on this week, so you'll get a double dose of the Piercy brand that JW, my buddy Dean Geronimo, talks about and everything. So you'll get a double dose of his brand, if not my own brand and everything. But definitely was great having this conversation with you, and look forward to having many more. Dean, I know that we've gone over the time, so if you'll let folks know about the replays and the other things that we've got going on, and we'll get ready for another exciting edition next week, because we came in with a little bit of fire on the last hour about a very passionate topic that needs to be talked about on a regular and consistent basis, and not just given sometimes the lip service that it gets, but definitely it's a vital issue that needs to be dealt with on a more regular basis, in my opinion.
Yes, indeed, and we thank Pastor Dr. Cook for being with us tonight. We greatly appreciate you, and don't forget, y'all, check her out on Saturday. She will be with On the Couch with Dr. Diamond, speaking more about her experiences saving African-American girls from traffickers and trafficking. So check out that YouTube link. We'll put that on the page so y'all can check it out, and please support. It is a worthy cause to fight. It's Straight Talk with Dean and Mark, y'all. Monday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to catch our replays on the Skyhawk Radio Network tomorrow afternoon and Wednesday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you missed those, we got replays on Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Podcast Addict, CastBox, PodFollow, Deezer, Jail Saving, and right here, Blog Talk Radio, where we are part of the Level Podcast Network. We catch shows like The Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause, The Chef Gang Radio Show, Funk from the Front Seat, Funk Music with Zach, Learning Unwrapped, Let's K-12 Better, Marketing with Russ, a.k.a. hashtag Russ Selfie, Mona Shake and the Minority Reports, Mullings Music and Memories with Mark Lee, The Online Dinner Party with Mark Lee, The Plant a Good Seed Podcast, The Reinvention Road Trip, She's on Call, The Just Podcast, The Mark Lee Show, The Spin It Social Hour, Virginia Interfaith Live, WNC Original Music, and of course, Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. Now, like I always say, when you walk outside your front door, showtime in the world is your stage. Just make sure that people are not watching the rehearsal. With that being said, it's Six-Man Dean Geronimo. Have an outstanding week, and we'll see y'all in 7 days.
That's right. We'll be having more exciting guests. We'll be talking about all kinds of things. Who knows? It might be business. It might be entertainment. It might be from the creative world or from the world of activism. But it'll definitely be some exciting conversations coming back your way on next week. And like Dean said, we're out of here and look forward to having more great conversations on next week.
At T-Mobile, we believe in putting people first by treating them right. So we've upped the benefits without upping the price. With Magenta Max, you get our best plan for 5G with unlimited premium data that can't slow down based on how much smartphone data you use. Plus, you'll pay zero cost to switch. And bring your phone. We'll pay it off up to $800. Only at T-Mobile.
Capable device required for 5G. Activate up to 4K or video streams at 480p. 40 gigs high-speed tethering. Up to $800 via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Support charges waived. See details at T-Mobile.com.
We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by RootMetrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network. Verizon. Best and most reliable based on RootMetrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.
At T-Mobile, we believe in putting people first by treating them right. So we've upped the benefits without upping the price. With Magenta Max, you get our best plan for 5G with unlimited premium data that can't slow down based on how much smartphone data you use. Plus, you'll pay zero cost to switch. And bring your phone. We'll pay it off up to $800. Only at T-Mobile.
Capable device required for 5G. Activate up to 4K or video streams at 480p. 40 gigs high-speed tethering. Up to $800 via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Support charges waived. See details at T-Mobile.com.
We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by RootMetrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network. Verizon. Best and most reliable based on RootMetrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks. We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by RootMetrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network. Verizon. Best and most reliable based on RootMetrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.
Ran out of propane? No need to drive to the store when you can get propane delivery straight to your door with Cinch. C-Y-N-C-H. Cinch brings the tanks to you. It's easy and convenient propane home delivery. Here's how it works. Go to cinch.com. That's C-Y-N-C-H.com. Enter your zip code, select your delivery date, and drop off location. It's really that easy. Just set your used tank out for pickup the night before your delivery, and Cinch handles the rest. There's no ongoing commitment when you try Cinch. And they accept any and all tank brands for exchange. Not a Cinch customer yet? What are you waiting for? New customers can get their first propane tank exchange for just $10 with promo code TANK10 at checkout. That's CYNCH.com, promo code TANK10. Turn up the heat this summer with Cinch. Ridiculously easy propane grill tank home delivery. Limited time offer. Restrictions apply. Visit CYNCH.com/offer for details.
With MailChimp, you get a whole lot more than a URL. You get an all-in-one marketing platform to help drive sales. That means you can connect your data to make more informed, smarter decisions, And you get powerful automation tools like our Customer Journey Builder to ensure you never miss an opportunity to turn shoppers into loyal customers. So if you're ready to integrate your marketing and boost sales, get started today at MailChimp.com/smartmarketing. MailChimp, built for growing businesses.
At T-Mobile, we believe in putting people first by treating them right. So we've upped the benefits without upping the price. With Magenta Max, you get our best plan for 5G with unlimited premium data that can't slow down based on how much smartphone data you use. Plus, you'll pay zero cost to switch. And bring your phone. We'll pay it off up to $800. Only at T-Mobile.
Capable device required for 5G. Activate up to 4K or video streams at 480p. 40 gigs high-speed tethering. Up to $800 via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Support charges waived. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At T-Mobile, we believe in putting people first by treating them right. So we've upped the benefits without upping the price. With Magenta Max, you get our best plan for 5G with unlimited premium data that can't slow down based on how much smartphone data you use. Plus, you'll pay zero cost to switch. And bring your phone. We'll pay it off up to $800. Only at T-Mobile.
Capable device required for 5G. Activate up to 4K or video streams at 480p. 40 gigs high-speed tethering. Up to $800 via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Support charges waived. See details at T-Mobile.com.
For the ones finding new ways to ensure the job always gets done. For the ones wearing many hats. For the ones who are hands-on, even from far away. And the ones keeping business moving forward. We are Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, with 24/7 support and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At T-Mobile, we believe in putting people first by treating them right. So we've upped the benefits without upping the price. With Magenta Max, you get our best plan for 5G with unlimited premium data that can't slow down based on how much smartphone data you use. Plus, you'll pay zero cost to switch. And bring your phone. We'll pay it off up to $800. Only at T-Mobile.
Capable device required for 5G. Activate up to 4K or video streams at 480p. 40 gigs high-speed tethering. Up to $800 via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Support charges waived. See details at T-Mobile.com.